The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
So you just heard there from the Minister, Richard Bruton, about the plan to spend €116 billion over the next 10 years on roads, train networks, hospitals, schools, all sorts of things. One thing that strikes me, the Caroline's plan, as Director General of Engineers Ireland, do we actually have the people with the necessary skills to do all the stuff that's planned?
Well, Matt, I suppose one of the things that struck me about this plan, and we do welcome it, is that many of the objectives contained in the plan will require engineering skills. So when we look at the pipeline and stock of engineers that we have in the country, clearly take a major hit because of the recession, the downturn, so a lot of engineers would have gone abroad. But one of the things that's really positive about this is I think for young people who are thinking about studying engineering, and certainly their parents, this gives certainty that actually the government has a line of sight for investment over the course of the next 10 years.
I don't know if it actually gives certainty, because one of the criticisms has been that, and I brought up particularly the National Broadband Plan with Richard Bruton, but many other announcements over the years have not been delivered upon. This is a great country for making announcements as to what we're going to build, and then they can get delayed for years or not actually get done at all.
Yes, but if you look at the range of different projects that are involved here, I think that there is fairly good scope. So obviously you do have the National Broadband Plan, you have a lot of stuff in there about national risk, flood risk management, you have wastewater and water treatment, you have retrofitting across energy. So there's lots of different sectors, I suppose, that this plan is supporting. And I think that's quite a positive thing.
But even beyond the engineers, do we have enough people with the required construction skills?
Yes, so that's probably one of the areas, the construction area. And I notice in the plan that there is a commitment to developing a dialogue with the construction sector. And that is probably one of the areas where, when we look at skills, and I think particularly about structural engineers, civil engineers, they're the ones that really we've lost from the country. We need to get them back in. And they're the ones that I guess we need to attract into the profession. So when we look at the third level colleges, a lot of people are reluctant to study courses in the construction industry because they haven't got this level of certainty. And as I said, I do think that this probably gives them some degree of a line of sight.
Okay, Frank MacDonald is with us as well. I suppose one of the country's leading commentators on environment issues for decades now. Frank, thank you very much for joining us. Would you share Caroline's hope that we have a degree of certainty here about things that will actually be done, or would you share my scepticism about ability to deliver based on previous generations?
Well, I heard Richard Bruton earlier on, and I must say I agree with him that one of the important differences between this particular plan and earlier versions, going back to the 1960s, is that the National Planning Framework has been announced on the same day as the National Development Plan. And the National Development Plan is the one that has all the money in it, €116 billion altogether.
So this is joined up thinking finally.
Well, in a sense, it represents an attempt at joined up thinking, because at least the National Planning Framework can no longer be dismissed as some kind of an airy fairy document. But the interesting thing is, of course, that there is a big difference between several big differences between the draft that was initially published for public consultation on the one hand, that was last autumn, and the final version that was announced today. And there are two major significant differences. One is that, of course, they have relaxed the injunction in effect against the spread of one-off housing in the countryside.
This is what you once called memorably bungalow blitz.
Bungalow blitz, indeed. And so we're going to end up having more of that, because in the original draft it said that the core consideration for granting planning permission for one-off houses in the countryside would be an economic need to live in a rural area, whereas now they've broadened that to be a social or economic need, and that effectively is a carte blanche to continue on as before. And I heard Micheál Martin, the Fianna Fáil leader, on RT Radio this morning, or at lunchtime, talking about this issue, and talking about how incredibly difficult it is to get planning permission to build houses in the countryside. It is not Absolutely not. There's been something like 170,000 additional bungalows and other houses built in the countryside since the year 2000. And in some rural local authorities, the planning permission rate for applications is higher than 90%.
But what's wrong with that, Frank? A lot of people, in fact, we're having this discussion at our production meeting today, and I discovered more than half of my production team grown up in houses such as that and love the idea of living in the country, isolated away from everyone, and having all the services delivered to them at the same time.
Well, exactly. All the services delivered to them at additional cost to the public at large. Whether you're talking about electricity, water, road maintenance, waste management, any number of things. I mean, you mentioned the broadband, the rollout to Richard Bruton earlier on. I mean, you know, that is now carrying a 500 million euro subsidy, public subsidy, to serve or extend broadband to the remaining 500,000 premises, most of which would be bungalows in the middle of nowhere that aren't covered already. So, you know, like, there are huge costs to the public, and there are also huge costs to the people who are living in these places, because on the one hand, they might like, to be surrounded by a supposedly rural environment, which of course is being increasingly suburbanized, but also they're locked into long-term car dependency. I mean, when did you last see a family, for example, walking along a country road? It's not possible to do that.
It's not safe to do it, and they don't have the public transport.
Incredibly dangerous. Incredibly dangerous. And speaking of transport...
But can we get to the transport in a second? Stay on the line there, Frank, because I want to bring in Henk van der Kamp, who is from the Irish Planning Institute. What about that point that Frank MacDonald has raised about that there seems to be a bit of a backtracking or backsliding on an attempt to get people to live in towns and villages, and that we're going to allow the proliferation of one-off housing with all of the associated costs of the country of that?
Yeah, and not only that, but that's certainly one of the major issues that we would be very concerned about. And the irony is the one-off housing is creating all the problems that Frank referred to, but it's also the death knell for many small villages and small towns, which cannot keep the services in place to because they don't have the supporting population, particularly the young population that a small village or town needs. And we were actually quite pleased in the original draft that it did seem to give emphasis to the support of the rural villages and the settlements in the rural areas, and now this seems to be rolled back on. This is also confirmed perhaps with the Rural Development Fund, which is quite significant in size, 1 billion. It's great to have that, but in comparison with the urban one, it's twice the amount. I think the challenge in the urban areas will be somewhat greater. But we are more concerned, we are equally concerned, I have to say, about the introduction at the last minute. In fact, to our information, on the last day, of five regional centres in the settlement strategy for the country. So where previously in the draft there was emphasis on five cities, which was recognising that the National Spatial Strategy had too many gateways, we now are back to nine, with five cities and five, or four cities outside Dublin and five regional
centres. That's politics for you, Henk, isn't it?
Well, I think it is, and it's a great pity, because actually both ministers, Coveney and Owen Murphy, had both said that the tragedy of the National Spatial Strategy was that it was spreading the jam too thinly in having too many centres identified for growth. We simply didn't have the population and the money to support that. And that was the one thing that I think we were all agreed on after the National Spatial Strategy was abandoned. And now we are back to the same. I'm just looking on page 23 of the document, which is a beautifully coloured map with all these towns highlighted with circles emanating like pebbles in the water. And really, it looks very much like the National Spatial Strategy to me.
Okay. Frank MacDonald, you've upset an awful lot of our listeners in the countryside. I'll just give you one example of a text that's coming to 087-4100-102. Since when did it become a crime to live in the countryside? People who do so work, pay and pay taxes and deserve services. We provide our own water supply and pay for it, sewage disposal and pay property tax. Some of us don't want to live in a box with no place for our children to play or even put up a clothesline. Apartment living is not for families. So what if other European countries do it? We are us. What'd you say to that, Frank?
Well, I just think it's wrong-headed, really. I mean, you know, it's as plain as a pike staff, and Henk, I'm sure, would agree with me on this, that, you know, towns and villages that are dying on their feet cannot be revived and rejuvenated and all the rest of it if we allow unrestricted bungalow blitz in the countryside. It's that simple.
Okay, Colette said, isn't it wonderful all those people in your production team who get to live where they want? No, that's where they grew up. But the listener says, when so many of the people subsidising them are stuck in negative equity starter homes, paying exorbitant inequitable property tax to keep services running for people outside of our own community. There's plenty of urban people who would love to live among their own community, but will never be able to do so. Frank, you wanted to turn to the issue of transport.
Yes, I mean, there's a lot of guff in the plan about climate change and about Ireland's commitment to, you know, play its own part in dealing with this overwhelming environmental issue. But at the same time, you know, there's a huge amount of money going to be put into roads. And I'm thinking, for example, in particular, of the proposed very controversial ring road in Galway, where an allocation of 550 million euro has been provided under the National Development Plan for that, as announced today. I mean, you know, Galway has become Carmageddon as a result of the vast amount of roads that have already been built in and around the city. And it's, and you know, again, it's as plain as a pikestaff that what Galway needs much more urgently than anything else is a properly functioning public transport system that will offer people an alternative to travelling into town by car.
But what about all the stuff for Dublin, all these new Lewis lines and the rest? Would we not be better off with buses? Because doesn't the Lewis just cause extra traffic jams?
Well, I mean, you know, I saw one Fine Gael TD cock-a-hoop on Twitter earlier on, Noel Rock, claiming credit for the fact that a Lewis line is going to be built to Finglas, which is in the heart of his constituency. And I'm sure the same will happen with a lot of other TDs saying, oh, be Jesus, we've got it, we're on the pig's back now, we're going to get a Lewis line to Lucan and all the rest of it. But I suppose the biggest single item is the proposed metro link between Sandyford on the south side and Swords on the north side. And most of that will, or much of it will run underground from Charlemagne Street in the city. Through the city centre, apparently avoiding St. Stephen's Green this time, which is a mercy because the previous plan for Metro North would have involved turning the northwestern quadrant of St. Stephen's Green into an enormous hole in the ground to install a station box there. Much of this route or the Metro Link will run on the existing Lewis Green line from Sandyford into town. So you'll have both trams running on that route going into the city centre, and also the metro running parallel with it, in effect, into the city centre and out again through Drumcondra and all the rest of it up that gets to Dublin Airport and Swords. And, you know, at the same time, they're planning to electrify the existing suburban rail lines to Drogheda and Dundalk on the one hand, and southwards as well, as far as I can remember, from Bray, and also as far west as Maynooth and Hazelhatch and County Kildare. And you know, at the same time, they're not going for the Dart Underground, which is the most crucial strategic transport investment that Dublin needs to make.
I want to bring in another guest.
Because it would link up all of the existing rail lines, both Dart and Suburban Rail.
Okay. We have David Minton with us, who's Chief Executive of the Northern and Western Regional Assembly. Because, David, one of the big things in recent days that people have been worried about is that everything was supposed to be going in this line south of Galway to Dublin, and that in particular the northwest was going to be neglected or get a lesser proportion sum of money. How well have you done? How happy are you?
Well, good evening, Matt, and good evening to your guests. Look, we're sitting up here in the moment this afternoon with the cabinet meeting of the government in Sligo. We were very fortunate to have them up here in this part of the world. I suppose it was an opportunity for us and for our region to get the recognition that it deserves.
That's optics. Did you get anything substantial out of the plan that's going to be of benefit to the people of the region you represent?
Well, look, absolutely. Well, we don't just think in our region, I suppose. Our from our perspective up here, this is an all-island plan. This is a framework for the entire country. You know, and first and foremost, really, the framework is extremely welcome in the sense that Ireland as a whole, as an economy, needs a framework to map out the next 20 years. We need as a country to start thinking internationally and globally. In this part of the world, we want a thriving Dublin. We want a thriving metropolitan city in Galway, and we want thriving urban areas outside in Limerick and Cork and Waterford. We want our whole country operating. But equally, we want the northwest of this region to be not just participating in that in that economy. We have a vision for this region that can actually lead Ireland into 2040.
But what have you got, David? I mean, did you get... we had one guest on the other day looking for a motorway to Sligo. Have you got anything like that? Are you going to get an upgrade in the Institute of Technology? What are you getting?
We have fantastic existing infrastructure, and the most important thing is that the Taoiseach mentioned today in his speech that one of the most important things for this government is to sustain the existing infrastructure, not just roads but rail, airports. He also committed to infrastructure, and I disagree with Frank a little bit in the sense that the Galway Ring Road is a must for Galway City, for the people and the industry of Galway City. The Taoiseach and the Minister is also committed to the idea of the Atlantic Economic Corridor, this idea of creating an Atlantic economy, connecting the towns, the cities along the Atlantic, the Western Seaboard, in this idea of a linear city. There's also strong reference in the document now to an N5 upgrade, and also the N4 will be upgraded between Killoony and Castle Baldwin. And most importantly, the Taoiseach committed to investing in our airports in Donegal, in Ireland West Airport, so that we can be the access point here for business, we can be the access point for the Wild Atlantic Way, and ultimately we can replicate the success of the likes of Shannon had in 1960s and 1970s, that we think this region can transform itself by these type of investments.
Okay.
And I think it's, Matt, it's extremely important to remember how competitive this region is. In 2017, our top five multinationals from this region exported €16 billion worth of products and services. And that's, we have a unique industrial and a unique settlement heritage that this whole country needs to...
Okay. I'm still not entirely sure what you've gotten out of this plan, but I leave you there. Thank you very much, David Minton. I just want to finish with Caroline Spillane and Henk van der Kamp, just to finish out. Henk, I'll start with you. What about the geographic spread of the money? Has it been dispersed fairly, do you think?
Well, two things. First of all, the addition of the five regional centres, everything David is saying, I agree with, but we said all this when the NSS was launched, National Spatial Strategy. We would love to see the development going in all of these places, but it did not happen. The counties that grew fastest were the counties that didn't have a gateway city in them. So we have to face these realities, and focusing on the five cities or even less would have been a better strategy, we feel. In terms of the spread, as I said before, the distinction between the urban and rural is very important. There is a logic in the National Development Plan actually given to the distinction between the 1 and the 2 billion, but we feel that the objective to achieve 50% of the growth in the footprint of the existing cities will be extremely challenging. That means brownfield land. It means higher land values in areas where it's difficult to get the land, and etc. And you need infrastructure. And the 2 billion fund for that is absolutely essential.
Okay.
And that's the spread that we will challenge.
Just to finish.
The 1 billion seems too high for the rural area.
Thank you very much, Henk van der Kamp. To finish, Caroline Spillane from Engineers Ireland. Are we going to get a better Ireland out of all this, do you think? Are we going to have a better country for most people to live in?
Well, I think we are if it gets implemented effectively. So one of the things that we've been calling for is the development of a single infrastructure authority. We can see in other countries that this has been done very well. And while we welcome things like institutional reform that have been announced in this plan around a National Regeneration Development Agency, a project steering group, a construction sector working group, which would deal with the skills issue we spoke about earlier. We think for the really complex and strategically significant projects that an authority should be established. And as I said, that has worked well in other jurisdictions. We think it should be put on a statutory footing. And the benefits of this would be that, you know, infrastructure is not about a series of discrete projects and programs. It's all joined up. And so in order for the implementation to work effectively, those that are involved in planning and implementation need to speak to one another, and it needs to be coordinated.
That's why you're an engineer, not a politician. Caroline Spillane, thank you very much for joining us. Frank McDonald, David Minton and Henk van der Kamp.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.